So I've been asked, let me get rid of these. I was asked to speak about the work and writings of Parker Palmer. And I kept asking people who are part of the organising committee why I was asked to do it, and nobody could remember. So I thought I'd just make it up. But I'm not surprised I am, because Parker J. Palmer is one of the people, one of the writers, who is most over, probably now somewhere between 10 and 20 years, has most continued to nurture, challenge, and foster my own life and faith and work in the world. So it's something fairly personal to me. But before I guess what I'd like to do today is not talk forever, you'll be relieved to know, but share a little bit about what that's about for me. And my desire is to give you each a chance to have a bit of a taste and in a way a kind of experience of the flavour of his writing and work and how it might or might not be useful to you in your life and work and faith. So that's the intention. But before I do that, I'm interested in a bit of a straw poll. And this is slightly loaded. Who has at least heard of Parker Palmer? And I do this because I know I'm not the only one. Now, keep your hand up if in your own judgment he is somebody who's been significant for you in your life and faith. Thank you. So what I'm going to invite those people to do, because if you're interested in this, these are other people besides me you can talk to. For those who held their hand up for the second bit, I'm interested in you to think about what is the thing or one thing about Parker Palmer's work and writing that has been significant for you or most significant for you. I invite each of you to say a sentence about that as an introduction. And I would invite you. That's on. So who would like to say a sentence as to what has been significant or why Parker Palmer's writings have been significant for you? For those who put your hands up. Anybody?
Parker Palmer talks a lot about vocation, and one of the things that I admire about him is that he found his vocation by allowing himself to experience a very dark and protracted long depression in his life, and uses that experience, uses his brokenness, if you like, to express his vocation.
Thanks, Ken.
I'm just a recent convert to Parker Palmer's work just in the last week. And unfortunately, I missed out on Phil Sparrow's talk last Sunday, where he talked about failure. And just reading and endorsing what Ken has just said, reading Parker Palmer's work and seeing how he went through depression, divorce, and all those things, and he still came out on top. I'm quite impressed with his writings.
Thank you. And can I just add, I'm not trying to make anybody a convert of Parker Palmer today, but give you a feel for to see of him if he's useful. Anybody else?
About some of the stuff about ways to work in groups, particularly ways to listen well in groups, really interesting helpful to work in groups.
Thank you. And I know if Lindy was here, she would probably say something. Is that a hand? No.
My sentence was just going to be something about listening.
Thank you. Done? So there's a bit of a little taste of others besides me. So what I want to do I've put over there a selection of his works, his books and writings. He's very Googleable. There's lots of YouTube of him speaking. He's a guy in his late 60s, early 70s now, who... 73. Sorry?
73.
73. And I want to give you a very small taste of my journey with his writings. The first book I'm going to talk to about a little bit is called Let Your Life Speak, Listening for the Voice of Vocation. And in it, he links his idea... No, I'll come back to that. The second book I'm going to talk about, and some of us in this church were in a group around this book for a while that I invited people to join, called A Hidden Wholeness, The Journey Towards an Undivided Life. Welcoming the soul and weaving community in a wounded world. And his most recent book that came out in end of 2011 is called Healing the Heart of Democracy. Interesting, given we're a day after an election. The Courage to Create a Politics Worthy of the Human Spirit. And that's where he talks about the habits of the heart, which I will come to. So let me say, I'd like to say a little bit about my journey and some of the key ideas that have been referred to, and then I'm going to give you a taste of something and see what you want to make of it. I was reflecting in preparation for this why he's been important for me. And one of the reasons he's important to me is Parker Palmer is a Quaker, an American Quaker. Which I think is important. Quakers, many of you will know, but Quakers are a Christian group that came out of England in the 1600s, who had a very strong theology of the inner light of God in everybody, inner light of Christ in everybody, had a very strong emphasis on everybody has an inner teacher. And so a very strong emphasis on supporting each other in community to listen to our inner teachers and recognising the inner teacher or the inner light within each of us. And a strong emphasis on community and a very strong emphasis on social justice. So, famous Quakers in the world. Let's start with Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon, not so famously, was infamously came from a Quaker background. But some of you will have heard of Richard Foster, the Christian writer Richard Foster. He's a Quaker, was a Quaker. Quakers have had, in my experience, a hugely disproportionate influence in the world for social justice and peace than their numbers would tell us. So they were at the forefront of abolition of slavery. They've been at the forefront of non-violence and peacemaking down the centuries. So that's the flavour of Quakers. So Parker Palmer is an American Quaker, and I think why he relates to me, and Quakers have been an influence on me, and for me in that and in Parker's writing, it's because there is an emphasis on the inner work and the inner journey of faith and on action in the world. It's a both and. It's a bit like Richard Rohr when he talks about his centre for action and contemplation. If you're not doing something, what's the point? But if you're not doing it from a place of transformation, humility and gratitude, then you're going to burn out or you're going to come from an angry place. So that's why partly this work has fed me over the years. I think the other reason Parker in particular has spoken to me, because he speaks to me, I think for me, of why this church is important to me. One of the many things I love about this church is we do not run church programs much, but we see this as a place where we come together to be encouraged, challenged with my work in the world and supported out there and acknowledged out there for doing it. Parker in particular has, for me, represented that. Basically, he's a Quaker educator who in the early 90s was funded by a philanthropic organisation in the States to develop a cycle of retreats for public school teachers in the States, where they could get away from the busy pressures of their life, their teaching practice, and relax, calm down, be still, and learn to connect. And the phrase in Parker Palmer's writings, reconnect soul with role. So it wasn't within the church, it was in the hurly-burly of public teaching life in America, creating this ministry to teachers to come aside and reconnect soul with role. And what I've seen Parker do is he's distilled some of the essence of Quaker and Christian theology and practice and offered it in an inclusive way to the broader community. That's what he's been doing. So in those retreats, as we'll come to, the notion of everybody has an inner teacher is validated. The very traditional Quaker practice called the Clearness Committee that John could probably tell us about and others, where when in a Quaker community somebody's wrestling with some decision point in their life, there's a very strict practice of where that person gathers around them a group of 4 to 6 others who support them in their own clearness to listen to their own inner teacher. And there's no fixing, no advice. It's questions and deep listening to help them discern it for themselves. Parker has offered that practice out into the public arena through his Circles of Trust work, which I'm now involved in. So that's a bit of a flavour, but let me, I've got ahead of myself as usual. Let Your Life Speak. This was the first book I came across. One of those lovely synchronistic coincidences. I was reading Eremos magazine at the time, some of you might know of that, and there was a book list in there, and this was on it, and it spoke to me. So I just grabbed it, and it spoke to me deeply. And the key ideas in this, as Ken says, is Parker simply short and easy to read. In this book, deeply out of his own life, he links the notions of his own growing up in the church, his own experience of what calling and vocation was about, which seemed to be always about striving to be like his spiritual heroes, striving to be somebody he wasn't, with experiencing depression and then coming out the other side with his own sense of vocation and leadership. Deeply personal. And he says things like in this, most of us spend the first half of our lives being taught to listen to everybody else's voice but our own. And if we're fortunate and we wake up, we spend the second half of our lives learning to listen to our own quiet, still voice. I find that really helpful and really encouraging. And the purpose of church and the purpose of community is to support each other to do that, not to fix, convert people. So that's a tiny glimmer into that book. This is his book of the practice and experience of taking what I just called there the circles of trust process, the retreat processes for public school teachers, into the public arena. And the way that groups, and I think church groups, can be circles of trust that support each other to reconnect soul with role, to listen to our own inner teachers. And actually, what I'd like to do now, can I have a hand? Can we quickly pass those around? Actually, give me a few of them. There should be just about one for everybody. I'd like you to have the first brief page, which is called Touchstones. Everyone can at least see a copy. So what I'd like to leave you with from this book, and in a moment you might have a chance to come back and meditate on this if you would like to. At the start, so this book here is particularly how the work of Circles of Trust or Courage to Lead retreats has spread. And they are a cycle of retreats that I'm now involved in running, where I think what I said there about the Quaker essence of Quaker practice is introduced to people. And there are now health professionals involved, teachers involved, engineers involved quite widely. So at the start of these retreats, which are the key idea is that community, the notion of we are practices for safety and hospitality, the notion of creating solitude in community. There's space for the individual to listen to their own inner teacher in the context of a supportive community. And these are some touchstones of the Circles of Trust approach, which are really the boundaries or the guidelines the safety net introduced at the start of each retreat. So I'm going to just read them through. I'm not going to comment on them, but you can come back to them later. And I offer them to you. Listen for the sense of your experience of community, your experience of church, your experience of family, your experience of the workplace. And what of these might touch you or speak to you about what you either need more of or want to offer more of in the places where you live? Does that kind of make sense? So see which ones get your interest. So touchstones of the Circles of Trust approach. Practices for safety and hospitality, for creating safety and hospitality, for supporting solitude in community. Extend and receive welcome. Be present as fully as possible. What is offered in the circle is by invitation, not demand. Nobody has to do or say anything. Speak your truth in ways that respect other people's truth. No fixing, no saving, no advising, and no correcting each other. Learn to respond to others with honest, open questions. When the going gets rough, turn to wonder. Attend to, listen to your own inner teacher. Trust and learn from silence. Observe deep confidentiality. Know that it's possible to lead the circle with whatever it is that you needed. I think there's some lovely ideas in there. So I'll invite you to come back to that in a minute. The final book I just want to touch on is Healing the Heart of Democracy, which was kicked off for Parker Palmer when he got very depressed after 9/11. And his own experience of American democracy and the response to 9/11. And this was his deep dive down into depression and finding a way out of it for what he needs to do and how he needs to shift his thinking about being a citizen from being an accidental citizen to being, not sure what the other bit is. And what I love about Parker Palmer is I think he speaks deeply from the head and the heart and to the head and the heart. And one of the key things he comes up with, he goes back to the early writings in democracy like de Tocqueville and where the habits of the heart come. He talks about the fact that to live well in a community, in politics, either in a church community or a broader community, we need to learn how to live in more life-giving ways with tension and difference. That we're never, particularly in our society, but even in a church, we're never going to do away with difference. But the only question is how well we live with difference and live in tension. So he comes up and names five habits of the heart, which he says we need to master individually and together to live well in community. So I like invite you to turn over. And I'm not going to read all this. I just want to highlight the major headings. Habits of the heart are deeply ingrained ways of seeing, being, and responding to life that involve our minds, our emotions, our self-images, our concepts of meaning and purpose in life. These five, taken together, are critical to holding tension and difference in life-giving ways and to sustaining democracy. I think these are relevant for families, for communities, for churches, society. That's my own experience of playing with these. And the five are an understanding that we are all in this together. Our future is dependent. We're all hooked up together for our future. An appreciation of the value of otherness. An ability to hold tension in life-giving ways. A sense of personal voice and agency, and a capacity to create community. I like to think of these, they're not one after the other, they're all important and they interact together. But at different points in our journeys or our life together, different ones might become more important. So that's all I'd like to say for now. What I'd like you to do now is to take a few minutes individually to look back. You've got a choice. You might like to consider these, or you might like to take time to read through the habits of the heart. So I'd like to have a few minutes of quiet reflection and meditation, inviting you to listen to your own inner teacher. Which bits of this, don't try and get it all, which bits of these, why this one or this one, speak to you, encourage you, challenge you, irritate you, and why today? I'm going to give you a few minutes to do that individually, and then you might like to continue in silent reflection, or I'd encourage you to turn to one or two other people near you, and don't discuss, but share what spoke to you and why. Is the task clear? And we'll do that for about 10 minutes and then we'll come back and see what came out of it. Task clear? You've got about five. I'll move you on to, if you haven't moved on. And if you want to move around, please move around. please share with someone else now if you'd like to. What from that touched you or spoke to you, if anything? So, yeah, what from what you looked at touched you and why? The coincidence of doing, for me, this speaks into the space of your email request.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. I sent that yesterday.
And quite coincidentally, in that, but yeah, one of the directions this took for me was to more explicitly see this as a lens for community, of which we are one. Yeah, I just wanted to, yeah. Okay, if I can interrupt you, I'm afraid. I guess rather than interrupt, I'd like to bring those conversations together and have a little bit of time to hear from, to the large group, from a few of us who would like to share. So in a minute, seriously, as many people who we have time for in about 5 or 7 minutes who would like to, again, I'd invite you to briefly share what's touched you, irritated you, and why. Let me kick off. Is one of the things that I've realised as I've got more involved in these circles of trust, courage and renewal movement, which is what's talked about, and as I've been to retreats, and as I've listened to people speak with such gratitude for the hunger that's satisfied when they're in this sort of space, I've realised I've felt incredibly grateful, because I realised for some time I'm very grateful for the communities, the enabling communities I'm part of, like this one. So for some time, and I want to name it with you, I've thought of Mount Hawthorne is kind of like a circles of trust for me. It supports me, it gives me space, it encourages me. So one way to listen to all of this is, how do you experience Mount Hawthorne? And I think there may be, I'm curious about on how more of a circles of trust might we become. That's what I'm wondering at this point, having talked about this for today. But I am hugely grateful for Mount Hawthorne because it sort of, I'm not out there on my own. I'm part of something that kind of gets me. At least some of you do. Some of the time. Who would like to say something? Or what touched you and why?
Thanks, Michael. I actually find this really helpful because it addresses where I'm at now. My work used to be I feel as if I've got my finger in about a dozen different pies, and yet I'm really by myself in each finger. So it's something I'm really looking for, but I don't quite know where to find it.
Thank you. But it helps you to see where you are.
As people probably know, I belong to the Relief Society of Friends, and I was trying to remember their testimonies. One is the truth. So the obligation to always tell the truth meant that they would not swear oaths in court, but that implied that they otherwise weren't telling the truth. This was another testimony, which meant they refused to fight. I think love was a testimony. I think I've got too many testimonies here, but some of them have probably come under another.
Can you hold the microphone closer, please?
Oh, sorry. One was to love. Another one was to community, and hence clearness meetings before marriage or undertaking some other big adventure in life. Simplicity was another one, which meant they refused to follow ornate fashions. If you've ever read the biography of Samuel Pepys, one day he lived in a Navy compound. One of the people in this compound was Admiral Penn. And one day young Penn came along in ordinary dress, you know, not the dress of the upper class, but you know, the son of an admiral. And he was, his father said to him, "What now? Would you? What now, would you? Have you become a Quaker?"
Thank you. Who else? That's it. Well, in closing, I'd like to do two things. And then hand back to Bevan to close. And I've actually asked that we close with the servant song, because I think that's a lovely expression for me of this sense of travelling together on our individual solitary journeys in community. So I want to close with a poem that's about that. But coincidentally, I don't believe in coincidence. I've been, others of you, you will also know that Henry Nouwen, and particularly this book on compassion, is hugely important to me. And they travel similar territories in their own way, and they actually knew each other. But I'm going back through this book where he talks about, basically this book steps off the Luke passage that says, be compassionate as your Father in heaven is compassionate. And puts compassion or learning to live compassionate lives at the heart of the gospel. And then this book unpacks that in an extraordinarily rich way. And part of that journey is to do, he says, compassion in essence is a communal activity. It's relational. It's how do we be compassionate with others. So community is essential. So this has got me thinking again about who are we, how are we, where's their life, what might we do differently? And this is particularly about how on earth as Christians do we be compassionate and be open to extraordinary suffering in the world and not feel overwhelmed? And he says the only answer is Christian community. The Christian community mediates between the suffering of the world and our individual responses to suffering. In the Christian community, we gather in the name of Christ and thus experience him in the midst of a suffering world. Wherever true Christian community is formed, compassion happens in the world. The energy that radiated from the early Christian communities was indeed divine energy that had a transforming influence on all who were touched by it. This is true not only for Benedict and Scholastia and their followers of Francis and Claire or the brothers and sisters, but also whenever men and women let go of their old anxious ways of thinking and find each other in the mind of Christ. In the community gathered in Christ's name, there is unlimited space into which strangers from different places with different stories can enter and experience God's compassionate presence. It is a great mystery that compassion often becomes real for people, not simply because of the deeds of one hospitable individual, but because of an intangible atmosphere resulting from a common life. Servanthood, too, is a quality of the community. Our individual ability to serve is quite limited. We might be able to help a few people for a while, but to respond in servanthood to all people all the time is not a realistic human aspiration. As soon as we speak in terms of we, however, the picture changes. And this is partly my experience of this community. As a community, we can transcend our individual limitations and become a concrete realization of the self-emptying way of Christ. This communal realization can then find a specific expression in the daily work of the individual members. Some people work well with teenagers, others with the elderly, others with hospital patients, and others with prisoners. As individuals, we cannot be everything to everyone, but as a community, we can indeed serve a great variety of needs. Moreover, by the constant support and encouragement of the community, we find it possible to remain faithful to our commitment to service. I think that's lovely. And I think we do that for each other, and maybe we can do it even better. And finally, the poem I want to read you speaks to that, is how we each have the courage to discover who we are and do what we are called to do. And it's called You Were Made for This. And after this is over to you, Bevan. You were made for this. Actually, before I read that, if anybody interested is in experiencing more of that circles of trust approach, I'm part of a team leading one in June, and there are a few brochures over there. And I'd love to talk further. You were made for this. One of the most calming and powerful actions you can do to intervene in a stormy world is to stand up and show your soul. Soul on deck shines like gold in dark times. The light of the soul throws sparks, can send up flares, build signal fires, causes proper matter to catch fire. To display the lantern of the soul in shadowy times like these, to be fierce and to show mercy towards others, both are acts of immense bravery and greatest necessity. Struggling souls catch light from souls who are fully lit and willing to show it.